Financial reform hasn't even passed yet.
And it seems banks are already looking for the loopholes.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. J.P. Morgan Chase goes shopping for a Brazilian hedge fund, even though the financial reform package in Congress seems to have something to say about that.
A little change in China goes a long way, and the buzz of the World Cup hits America's favorite pastime. But first,
the Financial Times reports today J.P. Morgan Chase is in talks to buy a hedge fund topping more than $5 billion. The Brazilian fund, known as Gavea Investimentos, was founded by the former president of Brazil's central bank. And the timing of the talks is curious, given part of the financial reform package would limit such transactions. Courtney Comstock is a writer for Clusterstock. She's on the line with us live from New York. Hi, Courtney.
Hello.
Now, what's going on with this deal? Explain the deal a little bit.
Well, the deal would mean that J.P. Morgan would increase the amount of money that they're investing in alternative investments like hedge funds and PE, and they would be increasing it by $5.3 billion, which is a large number. And it's surprising because the Volcker Rule would originally have prevented banks from making these types of investments.
So if the Volcker Rule were the Volcker Law, then this wouldn't happen.
Exactly. If it were enacted as it was originally proposed, then it would not be able to go through.
Why not? What does the Volcker Rule do that would stop this deal?
It proposed barring banks from investing in alternative investments, like basically hedging using hedge funds and PE investments.
And so, we saw this over the weekend as well. There was another deal that was in the works,
yep.
Right?
Yep. Citigroup is planning to raise $3 billion to make these types of investments.
Yeah, I'm curious, Courtney, is there something the banks know that we don't? I mean, are they seeing something? I mean, is this sort of a way to say, you know, we know that this isn't going to pass or the Volcker Rule is toast? Or, I mean, what is it?
You know, we can't be sure, but it clearly seems like they are confident enough that a weakened form of the Volcker Rule will go through and that the original version that completely bars them from investing in alternatives has no chance, or it'll be very easy for them to divest from these types of investments.
And to be sure, we've got two different financial reg legislation in either chamber, right? In the House and Senate, and the Senate's a little weaker, right?
Yes, the Senate's version of the bill is weaker, and it kind of just says that in the future we can do this if we want to, but there's nothing concrete. And so they must be a little more confident that the Senate's version or something like it will make through.
Courtney Comstock from Clusterstock. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, June 21st. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. We're going to get a take on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects the United States. China said over the weekend its currency will start rising in value against the dollar. China's central bank has been keeping the yuan cheap, but it is indicating that strict policy may be getting some flexibility. Here to tell us why this matters to you is Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman. Good morning, Mitchell.
Good morning, Bill.
So first, what do the Chinese mean by this new flexibility?
China is going to let the yuan fluctuate in a slightly wider band with foreign currencies. Ultimately, it could rise against the U.S. dollar by about 2 to 5% this year and in coming years.
And is this in response to the pressure we've heard about coming from the U.S.?
Well, yes, in part, but there's a big but. Chinese say that this won't be a big one-time appreciation to get the yuan more in line with the actual strength of the Chinese economy on the world stage. They say it may not even need to go up very much at all. And because the Chinese are sort of hedging and hawing like this, critics like New York Senator Charles Schumer say this is really no change at all in Chinese policy. He'll continue to try to pass legislation against China.
Still, if it rises a few percent a year against the dollar, that could make a big difference to American companies, right?
Well, sure, and Europeans as well, anyone that wants to export more to China. Chinese consumers will get more for their money when they buy everything from a Coke and a Big Mac to the Intel processor that's in their laptop. So winners could be companies like Cisco, KFC, Caterpillar, Apple, Motorola. Of course, there are also losers. Walmart, Target, they sell a lot of cheap clothes made in China, and those will get a little more expensive.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thank you.
You're welcome.
Now let's say good morning to Chief Investment Strategist Sam Stovall at S&P Equity Research. He's with us every Monday from New York City. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Bill.
Will the winners be American companies that that export stuff then? And if so, just companies that sell to China or that export in general?
Well, because China will be willing to allow their currency to strengthen, it basically will make other exporters more competitive because it'll make Chinese exports more expensive and put themselves at a slight disadvantage. It, in a sense, will allow other countries to be able to feed from the same global export trough. U.S. would benefit not only from what it exports to China, but also what it exports to other areas where China exports, in a sense, making the U.S. more competitive as well.
Really, how big a deal is this so far? How real are any of these effects?
Well, I think they're not really real just yet. Anyway, we haven't seen much of a move in the Chinese currency, but I think it is more of a confidence factor.
Sam Stovall, S&P Equity Research. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
So what does it all mean for China? We turn now to Marketplace's Scott Tong with us from Shanghai. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Steve.
So Washington's been complaining for a while that the currency is unfairly low in China. Mm-hmm. Why the decision now?
Well, the global economy is gradually recovering. Now, I'm sure, Steve, you're very happy to hear that. And it's especially good because it comes straight from the Chinese Central Bank. That's what it said as it announced what it calls exchange rate flexibility. As you know, there has been zero flexibility on currency for the last 18 months. To ride out the global economic storm, what China did is it pegged its currency to the weak dollar. And that made Chinese exports cheap around the world. But now, crisis mode is over, says economist Stephen Green over at Standard Chartered Bank in Shanghai.
Beijing is happy about the state of China's economy. So the effect of the renminbi exchange rate across markets has been kind of risk positive. You know, all those trades which benefit from people feeling a little bit happier about the world, taking on a little bit more risk, have benefited from this move.
Are we going to see an immediate impact from the change, Scott? What's going to happen today?
Well, today we have already seen currency rallies and stock rallies. You know, obviously those are bets on the future. But the actual movement in the exchange rate, most people think it's going to be a slow motion creep up. I don't see anyone recommending you rush out right now to buy low-cost Chinese stuff. So no giant rise expected over the next year, Steve.
Marketplace's Asia correspondent Scott Tong reporting from Shanghai. Scott, thanks.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Monday, June 21st. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at marketplace.org. In Israel today, members of the international diamond industry are meeting. They're part of what's known as the Kimberley Process. The group will be discussing whether to expel Zimbabwe because human rights advocates say the country's found a loophole in the crackdown on conflict diamonds. Reporter Gretchen Wilson has more from Johannesburg.
Zimbabwe's government wants all of its diamonds certified as conflict-free because despite its political and economic problems, there's no war going on in the country. The trick is the Kimberley process was created to stop rebel groups from entering the diamond trade. Tiseke Kasambala is with the advocacy group Human Rights Watch. She says the monitoring body hasn't figured out what to do when it's the governments themselves that are responsible for forced labor and corruption.
It is struggling to expand its mandate to deal with governments that extract these minerals by committing abuses against their own people.
When Zimbabwe's government discovered the huge potential of one diamond mining region 4 years ago, more than 30,000 locals rushed in. The government first brought in police to secure the area, then the army.
They came in with guns, with helicopters, and with dogs. At the end of the first day's operation, 200 miners had been killed.
Some observers say if the Kimberley process doesn't take action against Zimbabwe, it will be a death blow to the body's legitimacy and will leave no international group to effectively monitor the world's diamond industry. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
So, looking for that off-the-beaten-path summer vacation? How about Caracas, Venezuela? It features electricity brownouts, water shortages, and one of the highest crime rates in Latin America. Reporter Reese Ehrlich found out the Venezuelan capital sure is a real bargain.
In central Caracas, the streets near the Bolivar Plaza used to be packed with tourists. Today, none are to be found. I ask a waiter at a local restaurant, where are the Americans?
Turistas americanos. Yes.
American tourists, he says? There aren't any here. There aren't many from other countries either. A short walk down the street is the house where a famous anti-imperialist revolutionary was born. No, not Hugo Chavez, but 19th century political leader Simon Bolivar. I find just two tourists. They look like they could be Americans.
Yo soy de Moscú.
But no, they're Spanish-speaking honeymooners from Russia and Italy. They're just in Caracas for a few days on their way to a popular island resort. Many tourists stay away from Caracas, fearing crime. Even so, Venezuela's tourism industry is going strong. This year, the country expects nearly 11 million visitors, 2 million more than last year. Travel guide Raul Sojo says many of those visitors are poor people from Latin America attending leftist conferences and events promoted by the Venezuelan government.
They're sort of promoting social tourism. They want to have people that can't afford to travel in Venezuela, travel around Venezuela, subsidized by the government.
Better off foreign tourists still do come. They visit the country's spectacular wilderness areas and the Angel Falls, the world's highest waterfall. Sojo says a recent devaluation of the Venezuelan currency and high inflation mean that travelers can get great deals, just not at the official currency exchanges.
If you have dollars and if you change it in the black market, you're going to be rich.
In Caracas, I'm Reese Ehrlich for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Bill Radke. The latest crackdown on illegal immigration could come from Nebraska. A town there is holding a special election today on a law designed to make life harder for undocumented workers. From NET Radio in Nebraska, Fred Knapp reports.
Fremont's a community of about 25,000 people in eastern Nebraska with several meatpacking plants. In the 1990s, those plants began to attract Hispanic immigrant workers. John Wiegert says that's increased costs for law enforcement and schools. He's a leading supporter of the ordinance, which would prohibit companies from hiring or property owners from renting to illegal immigrants.
If you make it illegal to hire, you know, illegal aliens, or if you can't rent to them and you can't harbor them, why would they stay around town?
But opponents like Kristen Ostrom say supporters are driven by fear, and she says immigrants are a tiny minority in Fremont.
When we bust the myths, we know that almost 8% of our community are Hispanics. Majority of those people are citizens, U.S. citizens.
If the ordinance passes, opponents have vowed a lawsuit. Fremont officials, who tried to keep the measure off the ballot in the first place, say it could cost at least $3 million to defend the law. From Fremont, Nebraska, I'm Fred Knapp for Marketplace.
We have told you about the backlash against Arizona business and tourism from inside the U.S. Now some Mexican consumers are also boycotting, as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
Before the controversy over this new law, the Tucson Mall was popular with Mexican tourists. Margie McCoy is a stylist with the hair salon Sheer Performance.
Hardly any Mexican nationals in the mall. It's affected us a lot.
How much is business down?
You're talking about a big percentage, maybe 30% or 40%.
In the parking lot, I spoke with Alejandra Padilla from the Mexican state of Sonora. Padilla and her mom came to Tucson to visit relatives. On such trips, the mall has always been a regular stop.
But we don't plan on coming anymore.
Arizona's new law gives police more authority to arrest undocumented immigrants. Proponents say the law does not single out any specific group, but Padilla thinks it will indiscriminately target all Hispanics.
If you seem dark, they're just going to stop you anyways. It's like racial profiling.
But many Mexican consumers don't have lots of shopping options back home. One woman gave only her first name, Lupita. She drove for 8 hours to shop here for 3 days. She says lots of Mexican families come to Arizona for biannual shopping sprees.
When families come here, they shop for summer or buy stuff for winter, all the necessities. Imagine how much each family spends here on clothes and supplies.
She plans to spend about $2,000. That kind of bulk shopping is common in Tucson and in the border city of Nogales. Olivia Ayensa Kramer is president of the Nogales Chamber of Commerce. She says Mexican consumers used to spend money all over town.
Walmart, Kmart, JCPenney, and then they go and see a doctor. They go to a restaurant. They go and spend money on gas. So all that, they create an employment for different sectors of commerce.
Kramer says the sharp decline in Mexican visitors hurts businesses and the city, since Nogales collects 60% of its sales tax from cross-border consumers. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Listening to the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Well, today is the last day cigarette makers will be able to market their products as light or mild. That's because of some new rules from the Food and Drug Administration. But tobacco companies are making adjustments, and one tactic they're employing has some anti-smoking forces fuming. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
That pack of Marlboros might not have the word light on it anymore, but it'll still be gold.
Color is used in advertising to convey information.
Paul Billings with the American Lung Association says consumers will associate the colors with the packs they used to buy, and they'll still think they're getting a safer cigarette.
The data shows that the public does believe that products that were marketed as light or low or mild were somehow safer or less harmful. We know that these products are not safer or less harmful.
I think it's clear that adult tobacco consumers are certainly aware of the risks associated with the product, no matter what the packaging designation is.
David Howard is a spokesman for R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company. He says the colors will help consumers find the same flavor and filtration they're used to.
All the packs carry Surgeon General's warnings as mandated, and in the coming years, those warnings are going to be one half of both the front and back of the packaging.
Still, the FDA has asked the tobacco company Altria for all of its market research on consumer perceptions of color coding by July 30th. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
And finally, at Saturday night's baseball game between the host Florida Marlins and the Tampa Bay Rays, the first 15,000 fans were handed noisemakers.
It's not a swarm of mosquitoes. It's not an attack of the super bees. It is the vuvuzelas they've given out.
Now, the plastic horn may be the big buzz at the World Cup in South Africa, but Florida's center fielder described the vuvuzela noise as, quote, awful, awful. I can't tell you how awful it was.
Some people are even blaming the din for a miscommunication that may have cost Florida the game.
Well, lesson learned. The next day's stadium giveaway was cloth towels.
Much better.
In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bill Radke, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.